This podcast is made possible by Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Invesco QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. You don't need to be a bioengineer to help change the shape of humanity. Become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to Trillions. I'm Joel Weber.
And I'm Eric Balchunas.
Okay, Eric, a lot of things have happened so far this year, or didn't happen, I should say, that now that we're in the second half of the year, it felt like I wanted to huddle with you and get a better sense of what could happen in the second half of the year. Because look, like, there's a 19% up year-to-date in the S&P 500. That's crazy. Nobody expected that. We're supposed to be, like, mired in a recession that has yet to happen, right?
Yeah, it's been a wild year. And, you know, a few episodes back, we had Athanasios on my team on to talk about the FOMO drought. You know, all these, the Qs and SPY were up a lot, but nobody was buying. And that kind of ended. The flows are back. So that's one sort of baby that's been put to bed, is the flows now match the performance. But yeah, there's, you know, a lot of excess return right now. I'm always nervous when the Qs are up 36% in like the first half of the year. I'm like, all right, when's the shoe going to drop? What's going to happen to pull us back? Maybe there'll be an inflation print, although there hasn't been. But yeah, it's unexpected. And all of a sudden, growth and tech are back. And that's the sort of, you know, there's like seven stocks leading everything. And kind of feels like 2021 again. Like 2022 never happened. So that's the macro scene. But certainly there's other things in the ETF world, I think, that are really interesting that, I don't know, get me out of bed in the morning, Joel. There's a lot of interesting stuff that we're looking for in the second half that really could make news.
Okay, so for your summer listening, we're going to go back to Athanasios Serafagas of Bloomberg Intelligence and analyst with Eric, and talk through a few of the things to look out for between now and the end of the year. This time on Trillions, five things to watch in the second half. Athanasios, welcome back to Trillions.
Yeah, glad to be back.
Okay, what's the number one thing that you guys are, like, as the analysts, the ETF analysts at Bloomberg Intelligence, you're, like, rolling out of bed, fired up to watch in the second half?
Should I pass this one to Eric on Bitcoin? Do we want to start there? I don't want to start there, but...
Well, you already did.
I feel like we should.
You did.
Let's pass it to Bitcoin Balky.
We have to. Now, this is it's an interesting dynamic on our team. James and I are, like, losing our minds about the Bitcoin ETF race, along with Nate Geraci at ETF Store. Every like, 10 minutes on Twitter, there's some new document or amendment, and we're analyzing it. I feel like Jim Garrison in the movie JFK... Just basically all this circumstantial evidence coming at me left and right that Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone, right? And that's a lot what it feels like. I'm not sure what is going to, in retrospect, be the right clue whether the SEC will approve the first ever spot Bitcoin ETF. But where we stand now is that the SEC has recently acknowledged all of the filings. That's good. Now, in a couple days, they'll hit the public registry. And from there, a clock starts. And so we're going to have the next deadline date be August 13th for ARK, and then sometime in September for the rest, but the SEC could punt. So the first final deadline will be January next year. So the question is, will the SEC approve them before then? Will they deny them again just as usual? Everything has been changed because BlackRock filed, and BlackRock's BlackRock. And so that's really changed the game. And there's been other things that have happened in terms of Coinbase, you know, maturing, and maybe they're the kind of company that would have a surveillance sharing agreement with NASDAQ, and the SEC would be okay with that, even though they weren't in the past. Again, there's a lot of variables, but this is a story that's massive. Why? If they approve one, there's $30 trillion plus that is just more comfortable using an ETF, and those would be advisors. And so you kind of unlock at least a portion of that money to be in play for this ETF. They love ETFs, they trust ETFs, especially ones from like BlackRock. And so this is would be like a bridge from the boomer advisor, all the wealth in America world to the sort of crypto underworld. And that's why this is a massive story. It involves the biggest asset manager, the highest rungs of government. I mean, it's all there, Joel.
Okay, Athanasios, if you're the SEC, why wouldn't you just let the shot clock run out on this calendar year?
And maybe they might. I think we're going to get right to, I think with the timeline, it might actually push it into next year. And I don't know if it's just a game of waiting out Gensler or whatnot, but while I don't share Eric's enthusiasm for it, I think it's time. I think the market can handle it, right? The BlackRock is now involved. These products exist in other markets in Canada and Europe. Like, the market can handle it. I think it's about time. They actually just approved like a 2x Bitcoin futures ETF too, like ahead of this. So that kind of seemed a little odd, but I think it's about time that we move forward with this.
Eric, are you confident it happens this year, or do you think it happens next year? Or just, you know, we don't know, and it just keeps punting.
So James and I are collectively giving our team's odds, and we've come up with 50%, which we're getting like mocked on Twitter because like, oh, 50%, whoa, yeah. Way to take a stand there. But I'm like, listen, stop. 40%, that's the cop-out number. That's what the sell side always does. There's a 40% chance of it raining. There's a 40% chance of the market going up. That's the cop-out. 50% is actually aggressive, and it's relative to our ETF peers. You look at VettaFi, Morningstar, and others, I think we're mostly aggressive. 50% would be higher, I think, than they would do. And I even have another steak dinner bet on this with Todd Rosenbluth of VettaFi, one of our friends. I'm still 3-2 on these, and so I don't want to go 500. So I'm really hoping, if anybody from the SEC is listening, just to prove the damn thing. It's time, as Ethan said, let me have my steak dinner. It'll be glorious because he's such a downer about it. And I just think that BlackRock would not have done this if they didn't think they had somewhat of a winning hand.
I kind of knew, I had a hunch that you were going to say Bitcoin was the number one thing I was going to be watching for by the end of the year, so it surprised me with number two.
Okay, so now let's get into some of the ETF weeds, and a big thing this year is going to be the Vanguard ETF share class patent. And actually...
What?
Okay, so what... yeah, let's talk about what that is, actually. So Vanguard has this unique advantage that no one else has here, that their ETFs are a share class of their mutual fund. And they had a patent on this, actually, and it expired this year. And now this is up for review, and other issuers might try to copy this patent or, you know, get access to it. And one thing that also happened last year was all these different asset managers are coming to the market. So deciding, how do we want to do this? Do we want to just launch ETFs? Do we want to convert ETFs? Or do we wait for the share class patent to come up? So now with this being available to them, we're trying to figure out, can they actually get this done? Everyone's trying to petition for it. We've heard mixed results. The SEC is saying, well, we're not very comfortable with letting anyone else use this. Other issuers are pretty bullish on it. I'm on the team. We're pretty split. I'm very bullish on this. I like the ETF share class. I think it makes a lot of sense compared to some of the other routes that issuers are taking. Eric is very bullish on conversions. And the reason why I feel more confident into this, you know, talking about this, last week, DFA, who was like really came in really strong with conversions, they actually now filed that they want to adopt the share class, which I thought was really interesting. That, you know, sort of like the babies of conversions are like, yeah, we don't want to do conversions anymore. We want to start pursuing the share class. So I think this is going to be, I think if they do approve it, we're going to see, I think we can see a lot of issuers or other asset managers start to convert their ET or tack this onto their mutual funds.
Eric. How big of a game changer would this be if Vanguard is no longer the only one?
This is very huge. Again, if for anybody who is still awake after hearing Vanguard share class structure, I know that's very boring, but it's major because there's $26 trillion in mutual funds. Not all of it, but a good chunk of that, for a variety of reasons, is having trouble getting into the ETF world. This would actually give them a bridge over. They would just launch an ETF share class of their mutual fund. And they're really gnawing to do this because the ETF acts as something of a dialysis machine for taxes. It's a way to get rid of capital gains in your mutual fund and make the mutual fund more tax efficient. This is what Vanguard has done with their index mutual funds and their share class. So now, to be sure, it's not like a slam dunk, because even if the SEC allows it, which is a big if your mutual funds see outflows, it can be harder to do this correctly, because if you have to sell securities to meet the outflows, it's possible the ETF takes a capital gains hit that ETF investors are not used to getting because of that. Ben Johnson calls it tax contagion, and I think that's a great term. So, and we know most mutual funds have outflows. That's the big kind of marketplace problem with that, and then there's a regulatory hurdle too. That's why I'm still more bullish on conversions. A conversion, you come over to the ETF world, you leave the mutual fund world behind, bye-bye. You come over with your share class, I mean, your performance record, your assets, and your dignity. You're all of a sudden a player. And I think this is what most people should just do. It might be a little cannibalization, but in the long run, it's worth it. And so I'm more bullish conversions. James and Ethan are a little more bullish on the share class. And this is, you know, one of the things that we fight about, or debate rather, on our persistent chat every day.
Invesco QQQ is a proud sponsor of this podcast. Want to rethink what's possible? How about being an investor, not just in your future, but the future? Well, it all starts with Invesco QQQ. For more than 25 years, this single ETF has given investors a direct line to the NASDAQ 100. That's 100 leading innovators behind advances in personal tech, science, and robotics, just to name a few. And you can access it all with Invesco QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc. This podcast is brought to you by Invesco QQQ. What do all the greatest innovations have in common? Agents, people who participate in progress by supporting cutting-edge ideas. Invesco QQQ is a fund that allows you access to innovators of the NASDAQ 100 all in one fund. So you don't have to be an inventor to help create what's next to come. Anyone can become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Well, you went with the weeds there, Athanasios, and I'm curious, are you going to go more weedy or less weedy with number three thing to watch between now and the end of the year?
So this is a little bit more market related, and it was something that Eric alluded to in the beginning about the ending of the FOMO drought, right? And what was causing the FOMO drought? And one was that you were making decent yield on cash and money market funds. I actually think that we might have peaked there a little bit, and I think this is what has caused the FOMO drought to end. And I didn't really realize this until recently. For the most part, over the last year, cash was beating pretty much everything. It was beating stocks. It was beating bonds. Now, all of a sudden, because I think we were mentioning that the Qs are up like almost 40% this year. Yeah, and now you're like, well, cash is great, but you know what's even better? Like 40% in the Qs, and everyone's starting to tilt over to that now. So now we're seeing that most strategies are beating cash over the last year. And I think that's been enough to start enticing people back into the market.
Right. So that makes me think that we could see inflows go dramatically up between now and the end of the year, just because everybody probably still has a tidy amount still in cash, right?
Yeah. And, you know, there's still $5 trillion or so still in money market funds. And I think if it's probably enough to say, you know what, I can leave some in cash, but I'm comfortable enough to be putting some money back to work in the market. Whether or not it's too late, like 40% in 6 months is a lot. It's an aggressive move. So I don't know what the second half of the year is going to look like. But I think, to your point, flows should pick up.
Yeah,
just to add, flows into ETFs overall are $233 billion. That's not a lot. That's normally what ETFs do in, like, I don't know, 4 months. And we're into July. So it's been a little, but they've really picked up over the last, I don't know, 6 weeks to 2 months. They're having a good summer, let's just say. And equity is almost like 80, 90% of all the flows coming in. So equity is like, you know, like a player that, you know, is having a bad first half, like Tom Brady. You're like, he's not going to have a bad game. Like, at some point, equity is going to go full equity. It's the king of the hill, and especially U.S. equity. And it has really turned the tide here, and we're seeing the flows. And I think we'll see a lot more at the end of the year. But to our point at the beginning, how much more can the Qs run if you're up that much? So it could be interesting if the flows follow if the market turns downward.
Right.
And I guess we'll see. And one other related chart that Athanasios has that I love is percent of active beating the market. And that has plummeted because when the six growth stocks are crushing everything, it's bad for active because they tend to be fundamentally weighted and value weighted. And they just are like, there's no way I'm buying a stock with a PE that high. I don't care what company it is. So last year, they really did well. So this has been bad for active. So even though money's coming back into the equity market, I think a lot of it is not great for active's performance. But active ETF flows have been pretty good, which brings me to number four, which is the active ETF flows. So this would be the fourth thing on our list. And right now, they've taken in about one quarter of the flows, despite only 31% of active discretionary ETFs outperforming the S&P. Why? They got cheap. So the fact that active can take in money despite having a bad year is a very good sign. And it shows that once you get dirt cheap, you're less performance sensitive. Advisors have a little more patience. If you're cheap, they they feel like they're getting a better deal. They're not chasing performance. They're just looking for a good value, and they want active priced correctly. So active ETFs having a good year this year, I think, is a great sign long-term for them. Ethan probably agrees.
Are you surprised by that they were willing to get dirt cheap, or was that just the Thunderdome, you have to do to survive?
I'm not surprised, and this is a line that's Eric's line, but I think he nailed it, is that you have to come onto the terms of the ETF industry, right? You can come in and charge whatever you want, but ultimately the ETF industry will decide. And going cheap just seems like where it's going. But it's interesting because people are not anti-active, right? Even Eric mentioned the rates are way down, but the flows are still there. And I think even in the second half of the year, if we think that the market has run up too much, you might want to go active here, right? You might not want to be overweight the NVIDIAs and these really high-flying names in the queues. So it actually might make sense for the back half of the year for active.
Interesting.
Let me build upon that, because active ETFs, cheap ones in particular, what's interesting about that is Vanguard and BlackRock don't really have anything there. They don't really have an answer yet to cheap active. This is DFA, Avantis, JP Morgan. Those are the ones that are doing well. And this has made BlackRock and Vanguard take in much less. The big two has taken in much less than they normally do. They are punching below their weight for the first time in a long time. And I think it's because they don't really have an answer for cheap active. I think they'll roll stuff out. I wrote a note saying Vanguard has really cheap active mutual funds already. They should just bring them over. And BlackRock is, I think, a little more opportunistic on that front. And I think they'll just see the flows and respond accordingly. But I think cheap active is going to be, a really big area in the future. And the reason is because beta is free. So people just want to get charged for the active. So if you don't have a lot of high active share, you kind of have to adjust your fees accordingly so that you're just paying for that active. And so this is such a big trend. It's actually possibly not only going to curb the big two's growth, but it's going to swing the pendulum a little bit, because you know everybody's worried about the passive bubble. Well, if active finally starts getting flows, it should naturally stop those worries that passive is like eating the whole market up. And I think that's good. And again, I call this all the great cost migration. Eventually, everybody's just got to get with the program here. And I think active was just a little late to do it. But better late than never.
This actually, to me, speaks to maybe the influence of Cathie Wood. Like, Cathie could come into ETFs, prove that active could work and get attention and, like, you know, become a thing, really. And so this is everybody else realizing that they have to have they could have a version of what Cathie can do, right? Only they're going to be cheaper than her.
So I think Cathie deserves a lot of credit for kicking down the doors that you can actually, in some ways, she became a little bit of a rock star manager. I thought that those days were over. She kind of proved me wrong. But her active is a different brand. Her active is shiny object active. It's hot sauce active. And so she charges over 70 basis points. So that is one thing. I think Kathy showed that thematic and hot sauce can work. What happened recently, though, is JP Morgan, DFA Capital Group, they all came out with cheap active, in particular JEPI, the JP Morgan Equity Income ETF. That, I believe, is 35 basis points around there. And that has been the best-selling active ETF of all time. So what we try to tell people, again, is it comes down, if you're active or passive, you kind of need to be cheap or shiny. So I think Kathy broke down the shiny door. I think JP Morgan broke down the cheap active door.
Invesco QQQ is a proud sponsor of this podcast and a proud sponsor of Accessing the Future of Innovation. Curious what that means? Well, since March 1999, Invesco QQQ has given investors a way to tap into the NASDAQ 100 in a single ETF. We're talking world-changing breakthroughs that we can't live without today. Gene therapy, telemedicine, AI, EVs, and more. Still curious? Tomorrow's innovation awaits. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco QQQ. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc. This podcast is brought to you by Invesco QQQ. What do all the greatest innovations have in common? Agents. People who participate in progress by supporting cutting-edge ideas. Invesco QQQ is a fund that allows you access to innovators of the NASDAQ 100 all in one fund. So you don't have to be an inventor to help create what's next to come. Anyone can become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Okay, so let's do the last thing that we're all supposed to be watching for between now and the end of the year, or else Eric buys us all steak dinners.
This one also involves a bet. This is a sushi bet between me and Ethan. And I made a call and a note that JP Morgan will pass First Trust in assets by the end of the year and overtake the sixth spot, which is kind of crazy because JP Morgan was out of the top 10 just recently. I mean, they have made an actual parabolic move up the middle of the charts. So as we stand, and this is where my bet on Athanasios hinges, is JP Morgan has $115 billion in assets. First Trust has $140 billion. That's a $25 billion gap.
That seems pretty wide.
It is, but JP Morgan has taken in $23 billion in flows this year. First Trust is basically flat. So you get a little market help, another $23 billion. And JP Morgan is, the ETF line is led by a very aggressive guy named Brian Lake, who we've had on the show. And First Trust, they're a good company, solid. They've carved out their niche, but I think that they do expensive active. So they rely more on the relationships, whereas JP Morgan is tapping into the cheap active lane, which has been just a gusher of opportunity. So I just think JP Morgan is going to pass them by the end of the year. It's going to be close. The trajectory-wise has them rate at about January 1st passing them. But again, anything can happen. That's why these bets are fun. But Athanasios is a little less bullish on JP Morgan than I am.
Yeah. Props to JP Morgan. It's not easy to come in and make a big splash like they have. I think when you start to pull back their lineup, it's a little weak, meaning, you know, it's contingent on one or two products. The only thing I respect about First Trust is they've been around a long time. Being able to sell ETFs that cost 65, 70 basis points is not easy. So I think they've been able to weather a lot of different storms. And to something you mentioned too, like the gap is pretty wide. I think they can continue to have that lead for a while. I think eventually Eric will be right. I don't think they're going to get it done by the end of the year. But I always have, you know, any firm that can sell against Vanguard and have success is pretty meaningful.
I mean, I don't know about just a couple products. I mean, they have, ready for this, 19 funds that have seen inflows over $100 million this year. There's a good role players in their lineup. It's not just Jeppy, although Jeppy is like the king of JP Morgan, but BBEU is $4 billion. JEPQ is $2.8 billion.
I don't count those ones. It's JPST and Jeppy. The other ones are, I don't know if I want to cut.
But we'll come back to this at the end of the year. We'll figure out who's got steak dinners, who's getting sushi, and you know, Eric, you and I might need to come up with something else too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I like bets because they just keep things interesting. I've been doing this for like, I don't know, 17 years at this point. And it's fun when they come up organically. When you get into like a little bit of a debate with somebody, it's like, all right, do you really think this, or are you just sort of debating
let's see
what you really think.
We'll see if anybody has any suggestions for us, and we'll lay it down. All right, Athanasios, thanks for joining us on Trillions.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Trillions. Until next time, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter. I'm at Joel Weber Show. He's at Eric Balchunas. This episode of Trillions was produced by Magnus Hendrickson. Bye.
This podcast is made possible by Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Invesco QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code Radio20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.